time for Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk. And if you're not on Pro Football Talk 7, 8, 9 times a day, then you just can't be an NFL football fan. And Sunday, and well, coming up in the next couple of days, NFL owners meeting start up in Palm Beach, not too far from where we are right now. Mike joins us. Mike, are you, first of all, you guys going to the meetings?
You know, I haven't been to the meeting since before the pandemic, but we're coming back this year. We're heading down to Palm Beach tomorrow. Because there's no direct flights from Pittsburgh to anywhere, and it makes every travel that we engage in an adventure, we're actually coming a day early. We're leaving tomorrow, so looking forward to it. Looking forward to getting to a little bit warmer weather and be back down in Florida for the first time in a while and hang out with the owners, who will probably not want to talk to me because they'll probably be mad about something I've said or written at some point over the past few months, if not sooner.
Yeah, I know Steve Ross is probably going to want to fight you, Mike.
You know what? I met Steve Ross. Steve Ross walked up to me and he said, "So you're the guy that writes all those things about me."
Hey, by the way, good luck. Good luck trying to get to him.
Yeah, listen.
Good luck. Omar's coming up with some kind of plan to
don't fight. Tell people there's a plan.
I'm sorry, I forgot you told me. That.
Listen,
I'm sorry.
He used to talk to us all the time, Mike, and he's been on you know, deep, dark, secret, undercover. You know, no access to him for about 5 years now.
Hey, Mike, we got so much stuff to get to here, man. I'm trying to think. First of all, the onside kick. I saw some of your stuff. The onside kick is just basically a dead play. Like, you do it, but it's like the chances of it working. Mike, we might finally go to the gimmick, man. A couple years ago, people said, it's too gimmicky, 4th and 15 or 4th and 20 after you score. You think it's got a chance to pass? It needs 24 or 32 votes. Could you see it finally getting through?
They don't even have it on the table this year. That's the problem, because they continue to have their heels dug in on this idea that a 4th and long play to give the team that's trailing a chance to retain possession is gimmicky. And my take is it's the gimmick they need, because the onside kick is dead. The onside kick is worse. The onside kick is the thing that has been affected the most in a negative way by this new dynamic kickoff formation, because the surprise onside kick is never going to happen. It's declared in advance. You can't even do the thing where, hey, maybe they're going to do an onside kick. Maybe they're not. We don't know what they're going to do. Maybe they're going to pooch it.
Right.
No, you have to declare the onside kick and do the onside kick, period. So they need something else, because the team that's trailing has a much tougher time. And think of it this way. If the 4th and long option were around when the Chiefs were down 34-6 or 34-0 late in the third quarter of Super Bowl 59, there would have been a better sense that they've got a chance. Not that they would have had much of a chance, but the idea that you're down 34 and you're just going to have to score onside kick, that's not going to happen. But could the Chiefs get hot and convert, you know, a handful of 4th and 15s or whatever the distance will be? Yes. So I don't like it when any industry dismisses potential innovation as a gimmick. There are plenty of gimmicks that are good for business. This isn't just a publicity stunt. This is a way to take a circumstance that is currently impossible for the team that's trailing and give that team a snowball's chance. Just a snowball's chance. A snowball's chance is better than no chance.
Yeah.
Mike, I want to get into the number one pick, and I believe that the Giants made a move on Russell Wilson. This is just a theory that I have. After being at the UM Pro Day and talking to Tennessee and interacting with Cam Ward and basically realizing, okay, we got no chance here. We got absolutely no chance. Let's go sign Russell Wilson. One, do you think that Ward will be that number one pick? And two, what do you think the possibilities are that a team can get a deal done with Tennessee that could secure the number one pick so they can take Ward?
Well, I remember 5 years ago when Stephen Ross and the Dolphins desperately wanted to trade up to number one to get Joe Burrow, the Bengals just wouldn't even engage in the conversation. And I thought that was foolish, because we didn't know what Joe Burrow was going to be. Why would you shut down any conversation about a possible trade when maybe at the end of the day, what they're offering you is better than the chance that Joe Burrow is going to end up being a franchise quarterback? Now, they're vindicated by the fact that they didn't do it. But I contrast that with now, where the Titans seemingly are all in with Cam Ward, but they're kind of kicking the door open on the possibility of a trade. And when I saw the tweet from Adam Schefter the other day, and I always wonder when something like this pops up gratuitously, what really went on behind it, who's pushing for it, who's asking for a favor. We know that that's how it works in the insider business. A lot of favors get traded.
Yep.
But to put out the idea that, well, the Titans really like Cam Ward, and all that means is it's going to be more expensive. So, you know, if you're going to call the Titans, you really better bring extra stuff. And it's like, are the Titans just trying to – are they trying to maximize whatever the offer is before they pull the trigger on it? Is this all one big ruse? So if they truly were absolutely and totally committed to Cam Ward, we would not be hearing that. The fact that we're hearing it and the possibility it's being planted by the Titans to maximize whatever they would get in return, it just makes me wonder, is there something else going on? But I have look, I still remember Reggie Bush 19 years ago and everybody thought he was the number one overall pick and then he wasn't. I'll be as stunned as I was in 2006 if Cam Ward isn't the first overall pick.
Yeah. We all agree down here for a zillion different reasons, which, by the way, we used your soundbite last week, was so well put together on Cam. The kickoff return. Touchback, we got the answer. We got the answer on this touchback. Just move it to 35, and you'll see a lot more kickoffs in play. You think that'll fix it with the numbers that the league's talking about could fix it?
Here's what we got to remember. Last year when they convened for the league meetings with the proposal from the competition committee for this new revolutionary dynamic kickoff formation, the touchback point was the 35, not the 30. And at some point between the arrival and the vote, the 35 became the 30. And I just wonder, whatever it was that resulted in that compromise, is that still lingering? And the reality for the league right now, if they don't have 24 votes to continue the dynamic kickoff, it reverts to the 2023 rules. It wasn't a permanent rule change. Permanent rule change is a lot harder to get rid of. If you make a permanent rule change, it takes 24 votes to get rid of it. If you do a temporary rule change, an experimental change, it takes 24 to keep it. So they're back to technically right now the NFL is back to 2023. They're going to have to come up with something that will get 24 wow. votes. So if you show up into the room, and I don't know what the dynamics are. We never know how this is going to play out. But if the same vibe that was there a year ago about, man, we're not sure about the 35, and if there's nine owners who say, I don't want the 35, I want to have the ability to just kick it out of the end zone and not put myself in, you know, worse field position from the standpoint of what my defense is trying to defend, it could still end up being the 30 again. And, you know, people think that just because the competition committee recommends something, it's absolutely going to be done. The owners ignore or contradict the competition committee all the time. And just because that's the proposal, that doesn't mean it's getting done. Now, I'll be stunned if we go back to the old kickoff. It's going to be something based on what we did last year, but the owners ultimately, if 24 of them want to do this, that, or the other thing, they're going to do it.
Hey, Mike, just to follow up to that, we talked about this a little bit during the week here. Do those owners work mostly off their head coach and GM, what they would like them to do, or do those guys all have their own opinion and don't really care about what their teams think?
I think it's a combination of different spheres of influence. You have your internal communications with your coach and your GM, then you've got committees and other owners and what the league wants. I think in recent years, the commissioner has been more and more involved in using the competition committee as basically the tool to get what he wants. And this is what he wants. And if he has to twist arms, he'll do it. Remember when they wanted to do late season Thursday night flexing to boost the Amazon package? And guys like John Mara were vehemently against it. And the commissioner was not happy. And there was some pretty hard arm twisting that happened between the March and May meetings to get to the 24 votes to allow flexing to happen between Thursdays and Sundays late in the season. So if the commissioner wants it, he's going to get it. And for me, there's just a presumption that any rule changes that ultimately happen, at a minimum, the commissioner doesn't mind it.
Right.
And at most, he really and specifically wanted it.
Hey, Mike, real quickly, too, this tush-push thing, the success. I was shocked to see the numbers, first downs or touchdowns, 87% of the time over the last 3 years for the Eagles and the Bills. I didn't realize the Bills, even though we've seen them and how good their offensive line and how big and strong their quarterback is. It's two teams that are having success, and the rest of them, and I got to give Mike McDaniel credit. Mike has said, hey, man, I'm with those guys. Those two teams have figured out we can all do the same things, and we're just not able to do it as well as they do it. What's your take on the future of that and what's going to happen?
Well, the word of the Packers proposing an elimination of the tush-push hit right as the combine was starting, and we talked to McDaniel and other coaches and GMs on that Tuesday of combine week, and I did not get the sense that there is a strong belief that the rule needs to go. And Sean McDermott of the Bills, I thought it was interesting that he's one of the few who has come out and expressed concern about the safety of the play because he's one of the two teams. Like, the obvious position there would be the Bills and the Eagles are all for it, and if anybody's going to be against it, it's going to be teams other than them. So I think his voice in this is interesting. I'm trying to find out what, if any, recommendation the competition committee made on the Packers' proposal. But, Joe, we've written about this. When you look at the language of the rule the Packers have proposed, and this is one of the great challenges of writing rules, of legislation that becomes the rule book for the NFL. You know, we used to play board games. What's written on the inside of the cover, the rules for the game. How do you articulate it into something that makes sense? And I don't think the Packers proposal makes sense because all it bans is immediately pushing the person who receives the snap from behind immediately. And when you watch that play, a lot of times it's not an immediate push. It's more of a second act.
Yeah.
It's
yep.
The first push from the quarterback sneak, and then in comes the tight end or the running back to shove the rear end of the quarterback. And that's exactly how the Bills use it, and the Eagles use it that way a lot. So if they would pass this, it's not quite cosmetic, but it's closer to cosmetic than substantive. And I think if they really want to get rid of it, it's simple. The rule used to be you couldn't push or pull the ball carrier. And we used to see it near the end of the play where the lineman would come rumbling down and try to shove his teammate past the goal line or the line to gain. I think if you just ban any pushing of a teammate of the ball carrier in the tackle box or within, you know, X yards of the line of scrimmage, 1 or 2 yards of the line of scrimmage, that would be the thing that would get it off the books if they're looking to get it off the books. But I don't get the sense that there's going to be 24 teams that want to get it off the books. They've tried it before and it didn't work, and I don't think the Packers' proposal is worded in a way that addresses whatever the concern is against this play, other than, you know, hey, two teams are doing it really well and the rest of us aren't. That seems like a bad reason to get rid of a rule.
Now, now that we're done with rule changes, Mike, I want to get into some quarterback talk and some contract talk. I also want to point out to you that Stafford deal still hasn't been reported, by the way. This deal is like a month old now, still hasn't been turned into a league.
Omar, I don't think it's been signed. Wow. I don't think they buttoned it up, and I think Matthew Stafford should have insisted that it be reduced to writing and signed the day that they agreed to it.
Yeah. But anyway, let's move past that. I'm dying to know the Russell Wilson details, by the way. When you get those, let a brother know. But Aaron Rodgers. Now, we've known about this flirtation he's had with, Mike Tomlin for years. Do you think that that's actually going to turn into a marriage?
Well, and first, I'll tell you this on Russell Wilson. Some of the details are out there, and to get his full $20 million, among other things, the Giants have to go 17-0. If that happens, I will get John Merritt's face tattooed on my arm. As for Rodgers, who was in play for the Giants at one point, and it was 4 weeks ago when he actually reached out to the Giants, which basically let us all know he's got nothing else going on if he's reaching out to the Giants. It's down to the Steelers and the Vikings, unless he decides to just sit and wait for a starting quarterback to suffer a serious injury, which is possible. But this delay, and hey, I've been in and around Pittsburgh my entire life, and there are people who are Steelers fans who have already had enough of Aaron Rodgers, because their attitude is, just like Cam Hayward said last week, either you want to be a Steeler or you don't.
Yeah.
And
no.
The fact that the Steelers have the door open for Aaron Rodgers, if you don't run through it, then you don't want to come through it at all, and we don't want you. And
but I think he needs his cheeks kissed, and you know that.
He needs a little attention.
And look, the Steelers fans don't play that game. The Steelers fans are like, hey, you're either with us or you're not. And I think they look at the team and they say, what are you all doing? Like, why are you putting yourself in this position where we seem desperate? We're the Steelers. We're not desperate. Now, look, they haven't won a playoff game since 2016, and the contract they gave to DK Metcalf makes me think they're starting to feel a little bit desperate. But I think there's just a lot of Steelers fans that are confused by the posture the team has accepted, where they're just waiting as long as they have to wait for Aaron Rodgers to make his decision. And look how quick guys are making decisions in free agency. 12 o'clock Eastern comes on that first
bam.
Monday. This guy signs. Oh, go visit the place.
Hold on
guys
there, Mike.
Significant decisions. And like, how long does he need to make a decision?
Mike, I can tell you there have been multiple years where Aaron Rodgers has stolen the first day of the draft with whatever the news is that he's doing. He is such an attention hog, whore, that I promise you he's going to make a decision on draft day. You could write it down.
I got to tell you, he waits to go to Pittsburgh before the draft. That's all time.
Here's the other wrinkle, too, because he does the McAfee show every Tuesday during the season, and McAfee's doing a live show at the hockey arena in Pittsburgh on April 9th. And I had a reader point this out to me last week, and I wish I would have thought of it because it's so obvious, and sometimes you're too close to it to realize the things that are obvious. That would be the spot where Rodgers shows up with like a WWE-style entrance, and McAfee can tell him to the fans. And everything is forgiven. Everything is forgotten. Aaron Rodgers is our guy now. And that would make sense to me. We're getting closer and closer. It's just a week and a half away. That would make sense if that's how Rodgers does it. But I do think, you know, there's this mindset among celebrities. And it's like, hey, everybody, look at me. What the hell are you looking at? And they want the attention, and they reserve the right to complain about the attention they're getting. And I feel like that's exactly where Rodgers resides every time this happens. And think about it. A month ago, he was teetering on the edge of NFL irrelevance. We were thinking, there's not going to be a spot for this guy. So now he's back in the middle of the radar screen, and he's taking full advantage of it. That's the cynical view, but it also might be accurate view.
Oh, shortage of quarterbacks in the NFL, franchise quarterbacks, and he pops up again. Yeah, amazing. Mike, thank you, man. Really appreciate you spending some time with us this morning, as always.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.